All right, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proboski. And we're less remote than we have been. So we're all sort of in the same vicinity here on this Monday. This is the first, this is the second Monday in May. How you doing, Tim?
I'm well, Rick. I'm doing good.
Excellent, excellent. As you know, I had, my wife and I had just an incredible time in Florida, down at Fort Myers, for about 7 or 8 days, and we stayed at the Proboskis, down there, and, they're up here now as we are, but oh my goodness. The devastation down there, Tim, you know, 8, 9 months after Hurricane Ian is mind-boggling. They have rebuilt many of the restaurants, but others right in the same vicinity, are just still blown away. They've got their skeletons or they're just complete piles of rubble. Hundreds, if not thousands, of roofs in the area are still being repaired. They're damaged. You know, you get a sense of it on TV, but boy, it's nothing like when you really visit there. Just awful.
Yeah.
It was, but good to see so many businesses getting back, and they continue to rebound at Fort Myers. And I'd never been that far south, so, we used a lot of sunblock, and then we came back to the reality of 38 degrees. So, there we are. We have some scores in before we get to our guest, John Pinchon, the St. John's Prep lacrosse coach. Big score coming out of the Beverly-Masconomet game. Beverly 5, Masconomet 2. That moves the Panthers to 10-3, and it drops the Chieftains to 9-3. Bill Newell's going to be reporting on it. He'll have a post in that game later on. So that's a final, Beverly 5, Masconomet 2 in baseball. Also in baseball, Ipswich 16, Rockport 4, second win of the season for Ipswich. The Vikings have yet to get a win. And Lynn Classical, Tim, they continue on a torrid pace over Malden 15-0. Classical now 12-1. They've got themselves a baseball program going.
Oh, yeah, you know, we don't see a lot of the coverage of the Lynn teams because of where we are. Gonna have to keep a closer eye on the lit item to watch what they're reporting on. Cause obviously, you know, Glasgow is just tearing it up and mm-hmm. towards the postseason and a fairly good seed coming up in the tournament.
Yeah. So we'll do our best to keep our eye on it for sure. And Classical 15, Malden 0 today. In softball, oh, by the way, let me see. Yeah, in softball, it's Triton 2 and Amesbury 0 for Triton Vikings. That's their 10th win. They're now 10-1. Emma Penniman, complete game shutout for Triton. And the other game that we have in softball, the only other final is Danvers 3, Wakefield 2. For the Falcons, they are now 8-4. Wakefield is now 5-8. And a couple of lacrosse scores on the girls' side. Haverhill 14, Triton 3, and Marblehead 16, Gloucester 6. And, of course, the power rankings are in full swing right now. And in D1, Peabody softball is ranked number 3. In D2, Masco baseball, number 10. Salem baseball, number 24. In D2 softball, Danvers, number 10. In D3 baseball, nobody higher than 13 in our region. In D3 softball, North Reading, number 1, Triton, number 2, St. Mary's, number 4. And let's see, in baseball, D4, Haverhill is at, Hamilton Wenham is number 7. In softball, Amesbury is number 2. And in D5 softball, Georgetown is number 2. In lacrosse, as we mentioned, D1, it is St. John's Prep. At the moment, it could be flip-flopping with BC High, as BC High beat the Prep over the weekend. Or on Thursday, I should say. So they could flip-flop from 1 and 2 there. And in girls lacrosse, nobody higher than 19 in D1. In D2, in boys lacrosse, Marblehead is number 14. In D2, girls lacrosse, Masconomet is ranked number 5 with a record of 11-1. By the way, boys lacrosse, Marblehead, they're at number 14 in D2, and they have a 10-0 record. So their strength of schedule is going to get tougher. We talked with Coach a little while ago, last week, and, you know, Coach Wilkins was talking about his strength of schedule. It is going to get considerably more difficult toward the end of the season. And, Tim, I think finally we should probably throw in a good word about the Red Sox. How are you sizing these guys up right now?
a lot of hitting, a lot of timely hitting. Pitching has come around a little bit. They're getting, they're getting to the sixth inning with a bunch of their starters, which bodes well because you have to rely less on your bullpen. And we know how shaky the bullpen has been over the last couple of years. And they're pounding the baseball. You know, they're among the leaders in home runs, if not leading in home runs. They're getting contributions from a lot of different guys that I think many of us fans went, one, you know, who the hell are these guys and what are they going to bring to the team? And, that's what you need to have a successful season. You know, they're crawling back from the cellar. They have a third in the division now. Kind of tough to think when you're a 4-team division. But, you know, they're on the winning side of 500. They won eight in a row and they lost the last game, but, you know, there's always another streak that can be started. So, where they're in Atlanta, beginning of this week. They've been playing good ball. They've been playing some defense. You know, that's what you have to do. You have to put all phases of the game together. You can't rely on one, especially in baseball. And, you know, the defense is calming down. The offense is picking up. The pitching is shutting opponents down. They're getting some quality starts. You know, Sale has, I think, surprised a lot of people coming back from his surgery. And, you know, it's a long way away from being over. It's still,
well,
you know, it's the first week in May, so let's not get overly exuberant.
No, it's fun. They've actually been fun to watch the last couple of weeks, whereas the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season, they look like a Triple-A team. And I'll tell you, I'd like to see them play a little more American League baseball against American League teams. But I got to ask you a question, Tim. Who is this guy who is wearing Jaron Duran's uniform? And he looks a lot like Duran, but he looks different. Who is this guy?
Well, I think he's put on a little weight. He's put on a little muscle. He's playing with a lot more confidence. He's been given the opportunity, and I think he's trying to take the bull by the horn and really go with it. And that is giving him a lot of confidence. Cora has shown confidence in him lately. And he's trying to repay that vote of confidence with some upgraded play, and it's paying dividends.
Well, I tell you, it's shocking for me to see this guy, the fact that he's the same person as last year, because he's a completely different ball player, and it's great to see. He looks like a major leaguer right now. So they're fun to watch at the moment, so we'll see where that goes. No game tonight, but they've been kind of fun to watch. And the new kid in left field, I guess he's the real deal.
Yeah, you know, again, where the hell did he come from? I don't know if they get him in Boston. Knew who he was, and listening to some analysis yesterday, you know, the word was he could hit the wall field, hit with some power, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he's been doing it on a regular basis and solidifying that left field position.
Okay, we're going to see if we can get a hold of Coach Pinchon. He is probably on a bus right now coming back from somewhere as somebody's playing, one of his teams is playing. The varsity is scheduled to play tomorrow. They'll be back in action tomorrow in league action. They had quite a last couple of games, being knocked off for the first time this season and then coming back and beating a state championship team in a very close contest in overtime. So lots to talk about in terms of St. John's prep lacrosse. And again, Bill Newell should be reporting later on, not necessarily during North Shore Sports Night, but he will have a report on the Marblehead the Masconomet Beverly baseball game. So that should be posted later on. And of course, he'll also have the Salem News sportscast, the Salem News podcast with the sports writers coming up tomorrow. That'll be our regular feature as he interviews, or he hosts, I should say, Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and Nick Kukru, and they talk local sports like no one else can. Okay, let's take our break. We'll come back with St. John's Prep coach John Pinchon. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we are back with St. John's Prep lacrosse coach John Pinchon. And, Coach, welcome back. How are you today?
Excellent. Get some beautiful weather out. Finally feels like we're playing spring sports. I think
lacrosse players and baseball players in New England got to be the toughest because in the spring you got the worst weather. So nice to see the sun out, as you say, Coach. I want to ask you so much to talk about the power rankings came out for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and not unexpected that St. John's Prep is at the top. But you ran into a difficult time against BC High. I read the write up in the Salem News. Tell me about that game because, your kids are so seasoned and they've got so much experience, and you've played such a great schedule so far. Tell me about the ebb and flow of that game against BC.
BC's really good. They're very talented. They have a bunch of seniors, guys who've been on that team for the last 3 years. They did some stuff that we didn't necessarily handle well, a couple of defensive pressure things, and we threw the ball away a bit, and then their faceoff kid was outstanding. He won a majority of the faceoffs, and he scored 3 goals for him. So I think if there was, there's a lot of things that we could improve upon, and if we get a chance to see them in a game in June, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'd give us a good chance to see how much we've learned.
Mm-hmm. Tim Kearns is with us. Tim?
I'm not sure I want to jump to the win against Staples just yet, Rick. So what's the defining trait of your team as you look at them as a group?
We have a lot of senior offensive players. So, really deep in the midfield, running essentially 8 midfielders, on the offensive end, and then 4 senior attackmen. So I think that is kind of the defining trait of the season so far has been, just running all these seniors in the offensive end.
John, so often with, I'm sorry, Coach, go ahead.
I'm taking that statement, and I'm looking at the article in the Salem News today, and in the defining moments of the game against Staples, you said there was a time when you would call a timeout at that particular junction of the game. In that situation, you would call a timeout automatically, but you let them play. Was that a sign of again the trust that they've developed with you? Because of the maturity and the number of senior leadership guys that you have on your team?
Yes, I think so. We had won the face-off in lacrosse overtime. It's a 4-minute period. Generally, you win the face-off, you're taking a timeout and, setting up your offense. We had our guys out there. We were able to execute our substitutions, and I felt like it was best to just leave it in their hands and let them go out and play. you know, if we had taken a timeout, we would have put essentially the same guys out there and hopefully gotten a similar look. Look, in hindsight, if we don't score there and they go down and score, the newspaper article is, I'm an idiot for not taking a timeout, all that. But at some point, I think we need our guys to go out and execute. And Matt Morrow, who's a senior, he's been outstanding for us for the last 2 years. He scored the game tying goal, and we backed up a shot, which was on a sideline, which is kind of odd. He picked the ball up in a position that he's really good at, and he went to the goal and scored. So, I think that's seniors. You know, if it was a bunch of sophomores out there and some inexperienced guys, I think we probably would have taken a timeout, settled it down, and done a little bit. But when you have guys who've been doing it for a while and been around, you hope that they're able to make plays when you need them to. And we were lucky enough that Matt was able to.
John, often St. John's Prep's teams, how do I say it? They don't have a lot of competition sometimes in some games, and so some of the scores are a little lopsided on the one hand, but on the other hand, you get to get every kid some experience. A game like, for example, Andover, or a game like BC, the second game against BC, and this game against Staples, as a coach, how are you going to use that, or will you even use any of that in terms of preparation and how they continue to play? Because they've played some really close ones now, and they've even had the sting of a loss.
Yeah, we want to try and play the best possible schedule we can play each year. We're helped in that by our league being really strong, playing BC High twice, DeVarian twice, CM twice, St. John Shrewsbury and MC twice is good for us because they're very good. And then we want to go out and schedule the best possible teams we can find out of league. This year, being able to play Staples, who's one of the best teams in the country out of Connecticut, was a huge opportunity. We went down there last year and lost to them. And they went on to win the Connecticut State Championship. We had a great year. Same thing with LaSalle. LaSalle was state champs in Rhode Island last year. We played them the week before into an overtime game, which, again, we play those games because it's preparing us to hopefully perform in June. And I think the challenge for us right now is, can we get better? Can we learn from those experiences?
Mm-hmm.
And put it all together when it really matters down the stretch.
Tim?
We always talk about a coach, growing up, the coaches that you played for would always say, you want to get better, you have to play up. You can't play down, you can't play lesser opponents. You've got to play up, you've got to play the guys that may be better than you, to challenge yourself to find out just how good you are. And when you have that success, it's the confidence that you gain from those kind of confrontations that really serve you well, especially later, like you said, later in the season.
Yeah, the opportunity to play the best teams possible is something that we do it to get better, and I think it hopefully pays dividends in June.
Coach, back to league play now on Wednesday. You've got no, I guess it's Tuesday. Excuse me. You got CM coming up, and okay, you won the first time around, but they've got a pretty good record. What's the preview against them?
We need to be ready. A hour and a half bus ride down to West Roxbury is always tough. CM always comes out and plays us really tough when we play down at their place. So we need to be ready for them. They have some good offensive players who impressed us the first time we played them at our place. Coach Powers has done a really, really good job. I think one of the things that I look for as a coach is, when we go play a team, are they organized? Are they disciplined? How are they doing all these little things? And every time we have played CM over the last 3 years, they have gotten better at all of those things. So Coach Powers has done a great job there, and our guys really need to show up. And, you know, it's one of those, I think these are great opportunities to play a team twice in the regular season, because there's a very good chance that you end up playing a team twice or three times in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for a high school athlete, you want to remind them, hey, last game, take a couple things from it, look at what they did, but forget about the result, because it literally has nothing to do with this game. Let's just focus on making sure we show up and play well. So it'll be a good test for us tomorrow on the road down there.
Tim, some final thoughts for Coach Pinchon?
Coach, again, I was just looking through the Salem News. Do you ever guys ever play any of the ISL teams, like Tingri or any of those?
No. One, the games don't count for our, like, for our record, because they're not part of the MIAA or part of their own state association, like Staples plays in the CIAC. So that's one reason. And then the other reason is there's just a scheduling difference. They start about either 2 weeks or 3 weeks before us, so that when we are in our scrimmages preseason, they're already in their regular season. And then when we are getting ready for the postseason and we're trying to find scrimmages, most of those schools actually wrap up before Memorial Day. So we will occasionally find time to scrimmage them. We'll scrimmage some of them at the sub-varsity levels. But we really, we don't play any of them in the regular season.
I'm just seeing Malden Catholic is the only other – well, Malden Catholic and Hingham, you got more games on the schedule left than that, don't you?
Yeah, so we play CM tomorrow night. Next Tuesday we go up and play Bishop Girton. They are
okay.
The best team in New Hampshire. That should be a really, really tough game. Bishop Girton's excellent. The following day we play Malden Catholic. Then the following week we go to Shrewsbury, St. John Shrewsbury on a Tuesday, and we end the season on Saturday, Memorial Day weekend against Hingham, which will be another great game.
So oh my goodness.
We've got a good 5-game stretch here to wrap up before the playoffs come
okay.
out.
Okay, and how's practice gone since Staples?
Well, we had one today, and it did not go well.
Uh-oh.
So, the longer I do this, the more I'm reminded of what Coach Wilkins at Marblehead always used to say, which is we are coaching 15 to 18-year-old high school kids. And as much as you love them, sometimes they just have so much stuff going on in their lives. This is a busy time for them. They're wrapping up classes, taking AP exams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, for us as adults who are able to manage and focus, I think it's a good reminder that we got to make sure we check our perspectives and keep our focus on helping these kids perform and be ready to perform when they need to. And sometimes they might just not have it.
Yeah. Well, we can say that for adults, too. So it's it's so much more important. And I'll tell you, it's funny what you just said with Coach Wilkins. Brian St. Pierre, whenever we talk football, he is always saying, people have got to be reminded. They're still kids. They're good. Yep. They're talented, but they're still kids. So, oh, God. Great talking with you, Coach. And I want to do it again, of course. But in the meantime, congratulations on a fantastic season up to this point. And good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Have a good day.
All right. That's John Pinchon, who is the coach of the St. John's Prep lacrosse team. Tim, it's funny, going into, to proctor AP exams, obviously the further I get away from it, being retired from teaching, the younger the kids seem to be. But even at, AP exam, they're calculus today and physics and stuff like it. They're at the top of the game, but they're still just kids.
Oh yeah, I'm in tomorrow morning for the exam, and it's so interesting to see them and to watch them rack their brains as they ponder the questions and they attempt to answer them and come up with the best answers that they can. It's a challenge, and I just think back to the years when I taught the advanced placement at Gloucester, and I taught it for 19 years, and I spent 8 years as a reader, and you're like, I know what you're going to do.
Yeah, and the other thing too, Tim, is I was talking with the librarian at Gloucester High School, and she's so excited about how this year went because, it's the first year in many that it was almost completely devoid of the threat of the pandemic, and I when I see these kids, whether they're athletes, student athletes or not, I like to praise them and congratulate them on navigating what they've done because they really got screwed out of more than a year of education. No matter what people say, it was hard. They did not get the education that they ordinarily would have, but they stuck with it. And now you see these kids taking advanced placement exams, which means they got back to where they're supposed to be, and that's just a credit to not only them, but everybody associated with them, the teachers and their parents as well.
Oh, yeah. you know, it's extraordinary amount of work that they have to do beyond the normal classes, you know, and the level of expectation that they face to do well. And, you know, the majority, like for the AP history, the majority of kids get twos, and a three is the minimum qualifying score for college credit. And it just shows you just how hard it is to achieve success in that. But the numbers that do get qualifying scores is staggering as well.
Yeah, and the thing I always tell the kids when I'm proctoring an exam is that the hard work is done. Excuse me. When you're getting ready to take the exam, the hard work is already done. You did it all year long. And even if you don't get, you know, a three or above, you're still going to excel next year if you take a course in the same discipline that your exam is in. And I still keep referring to calculus. You don't get better than a two in calc or even a one. You're still going to blow away the competition in calculus the following year in college because you're ready. And I
always told the kids, you know, as we were getting ready, you know more than you think. Okay? You have been here. You have worked. You have listened. And you actually have taken in more knowledge than you think you have. And when you're reading the test, find the keywords that will lead you to the answer, because it's there in front of you. Just relax, identify the topic of the question, and then eliminate the absolute wrong answers, and then you got a choice of two, and the right one will stand out for you.
Well, I hope all our seniors across the North Shore will have a great month of May and June, months of May and June, and have a terrific celebration at the end, because they've been through, talk about thick and thin, they've been through it and have achieved great. All right, let me go through the scores again very quickly that I do have. In baseball, Beverly 5, Mascanoma 2. Bill Newell will have a post on that eventually. If not tonight, then certainly in the morning. Ipswich 16, Rockport 4, Lynn Classical 15, Malden 0. Those are the baseball scores I have so far. In softball, Triton shut out Amesbury 2-0, Danvers over Wakefield 3-2, and in girls lacrosse, Haverhill 14, Triton 3, and Marblehead over Gloucester 14-6. Okay, we're going to take a break and come back with our basketball insider, talk a little Celtic action, talk about frustrating. Oh, my goodness. We'll be back. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell working feverishly back at headquarters. We'll be right back.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're back now with our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And Mike, what's left of my hair it's not going to be there very much anymore, because what the remaining two strands I have, I practically pulled out last night.
Oh yeah, I think a lot of people with even gray hair or fully formed hair or even afro, the old afro type, you could lose a lot of your hair watching that Celtics Philadelphia game last night if you're on the Celtics side of things and hoping the Celtics win. I mean, it doesn't matter, because the game was about as infuriating as any game this year. Probably more infuriating because of the stakes that are so high right now, trying to reach the Eastern Conference Finals if you win this series.
I got it. Before I let Tim jump in and take over here, I have to ask you a question about championship teams, because you've seen them way back, you've seen them, not so far back, and you've seen them recently. I can't remember a championship team doing what the Celtics have done, especially in the playoffs, in terms of throwing a game away. And that's the only way I can phrase it.
I agree.
They've done it twice. And I remember listening to, I've mentioned before, when I listened to KMOX St. Louis a long time ago when the Celtics would play the Hawks in the playoffs and whoever they would play, they would have games just like yesterday. They'd be behind by 10 or 15. Then they'd come on, they'd tie it up in the final 2 minutes, and they would win the game. Are there instances that you can think of with the Celtic championship teams when they've done something like what they've done in this playoff?
No, I can't think. I think back to, you know, I covered the 1983 team just before they won the 1984 series, and they had a great, talented team, but they were sour on Bill Fitch, the coach. They just didn't play for him against the Milwaukee Bucks, and they lost four straight. But this team is really aggravating. And, Tim, I want to hear your take on this, because I feel right now the Celtics could have swept this series, okay? Because if you're a capable NBA team with a lot of talent, which the Celtics are, no one's denying their talent. If James Harden has just hit a three to put you ahead by one, and first of all, before James Harden hits the three, what is Jaylen Brown thinking when you're up two to try to double-team Embiid, who could only tie the game because he was in the key, and you leave James Harden alone when he was already 15 for 22 shooting, and he was 5 for 8 from the three-point line at that point? You leave him alone in the corner, and he hits the three to put the... Right, Tim? So that you start with that. But Tim, what do you think of that to begin with?
They go brain dead, Mike.
I'm sorry?
They simply go brain dead.
Yeah.
They stop thinking on a sensible level, and it's like they lose all concept of reality and what you should be doing, what you know they probably practice doing and they've talked about doing is don't leave him alone, whatever you do, challenge him, you know, get in his face, get a hand in his face, which doesn't seem to make a whole lot of difference when you're talking Harden throwing the ball up.
Right.
You know, but you've got to challenge, you can't just leave him alone. You know, and Bede is not your biggest problem from that distance. James Harden is your biggest problem out there.
Well,
so why would
you leave
him alone?
Yeah, and right, exactly. And Embiid, all he could have done from the key was tie the game. So the Celtics would have had the final shot, and even if they miss it, you're going to have an overtime. But by leaving Harden alone in the corner, and he's having a great night, 42 points, he puts them ahead by one. And then part two of this, right, Rick, is that the Celtics had 19 seconds after Harden made that shot. If you're a playoff-caliber team, and you can't get a shot off in 19 seconds, which the Celtics didn't, that's, to me, is inexcusable. It's mind-boggling. Of course, Joe Bazzulla took a lot of heat, you know, and deserved it for not calling a timeout. But if you've got players like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and people like that, and you can't get a shot off in 19 seconds and the clock runs out on you, whoa, shame on you. Yeah, shame on the coach for not calling a timeout. But he's so-called empowering the players to win the games. And Jason Tatum, when he let go of that pass, Marcus Smart was already a lost case. When he received the ball, there was no way he could get the ball off in time.
Right.
You can't put Marcus Smart hit the shot. He did his job. Jason Tatum delivered it too late. It's sort of like handing you two tickets to the Taylor Swift concert when she's exiting the stage.
Okay, a lot of stuff here, man. My goodness. I was actually yelling at the TV. I watched it. I DVD'd it, so I watched it later on. And when they got the ball with 19 seconds left and they went under the basket to take it out, I'm screaming, what are you doing? What are you doing? With 19, what are you doing? And then what was the most infuriating part of that whole game, and I want to get to some positive stuff later, but was when Tatum just dribbled and dribbled and dribbled. Like, oh my God, there's so many people who can score on that team, and they just stood there. And they lost.
Yep, I couldn't agree more, Rick. I mean, I actually tweeted about a week ago that for all of Tatum's skills, he certainly doesn't have Larry Bird's basketball IQ.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Bird would have got rid of the ball, or he would have taken a shot long before the 19 seconds it had elapsed, okay? So why wouldn't you want to take a shot with 5 or 6 seconds left to give yourself a chance for an offensive rebound if you missed it? Or if you hit that shot, then you're relying on your defense, and the 76ers were out of timeouts, by the way. So had the Celtics gone ahead with 4 or 5 seconds left, 76ers had to take the ball out, and it would have been a chaotic offensive situation for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another factor that Joe Mazzulla should have considered. By the way, he admitted about 2 hours ago, Mazzulla did,
mm-hmm.
that he should have called a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a little late for that now, Joe, because now the series is tied 2-2 when it should really be 3-1 or maybe 4-0 because they lost game one in a chaotic fashion, too, and by a point. The games the Celtics have won, right, Tim? They won by 34 points at home, and they won by a solid 12 points on the road in Philadelphia Friday night. So their two wins have been by a combined 46 points, all right, and the Philadelphia's two wins have been by a combined 3 or 4 points. So the Celtics are a better team, but now it comes down to a game five, and the Celtics really have to protect home court because they could easily lose this series if they have a bad night tomorrow or if Harden goes off for another 40 or 45 points or if Embiid goes off for 38 or whatever, and then it'll be, you know, advantage Philadelphia going back for game six.
Yeah, you know, Mike, you think back, is it Mazzulla's lack of coaching experience coming to the forefront here in crunch time that he's afraid to make a tough decision like calling the timeout because he doesn't want to aggravate his star players? Well, I'm going to let them decide the fate of the game. Well, that's your job as a coach to give them the game plan. To win the game. Can you see Red Auerbach not calling timeout? Bill Finch, Bill Russell, Tommy Heinsohn not calling timeout?
Oh.
He's out there pulling guys off the court.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
You just, nowadays, well, you know, you empower the athlete. No, you're a coach for a reason because these guys still need direction.
That's right. That's right. And not only that, you set yourself up for a good play coming out of a timeout where, I mean, Tatum is very skilled. He's going to draw the double or triple team. So, you know, but if he gets into the early action, meaning with, like you said, Rick, they had 19 seconds left, and he's going, what are they doing? What are they doing? Well, even if they don't call a timeout, if Tatum starts going to the basket with 9 or 10 seconds left instead of, I think it was like 5.7 when he started making his move to the basket. And really, when you're at that point and you draw the triple team and then you're throwing it outside to Marcus Smart, 0.3 of a second, that's the dividing line between a shot does not count. You cannot catch and shoot with 0.3 of a second left. The only thing you can do is tap the ball in on a lob. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So Jason Tatum has to have that clock in his head that says, I got to get rid of this ball with like 4 or 5 seconds left to give one of my teammates an open shot, a shot that will count before the time the game clock expires. And that was an incredible bad basketball play by Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
A really, really terrible play.
I would like to see a little more something from D. White. Derek White, I don't think has shown like he can. But
right.
On the other hand, watching Al Horford yesterday block Embiid time after time after time, like, where did Al Horford come from? He's playing like he's possessed. I mean, I thought he had a great game.
Well, you know, I think to me, I think I mentioned this last week, Rick. Well, you and I mentioned it when we had a separate little insider section where Horford, he knows he's going to be 37 years old very soon, and he wants this badly because he, for all we know, he may retire come June 15th or something like that. You know, so he's playing with more urgency and more intensity and more fire than the young guys. And so you think they could learn from him in terms of playing with urgency, but they haven't. And Rick, let's mention another guy. Tim, I'd love for you to jump in on this one too, and Rick too. Is Robert Williams ever going to show any potential to be a winning player? He played 16 minutes yesterday, had zero impact on the game, like 2 or 3 points. Mazzulla isn't using him. And when Embiid's got the ball and you see Tatum trying to guard him, I mean, a guy who's Embiid's 60 or 70 pounds heavier, and you have Tatum guarding him, why isn't Robert Williams in there trying to body up against him? Because Robert Williams at that point is sitting on the bench. He sat on the bench for, well, let's see, 53 minutes. So he plays 37 of the 53 minutes he was on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfathomable to me for a guy who's that athletic, who has shot blocking skills. Is this guy going to be a player or not? Missoula has to decide. The Celtics have to decide. Because right now, Robert Williams is not impacting the game in any way, shape, or form in this series.
Yeah, it's strange. You know, is he hurt? You know, can they only spot him, like you said, for 60 minutes, and they got to sit him down because he's not doing them any good because he's not playing seemingly in key stretches where he become a difference maker. You know, right. If you're going to play him 16 minutes, play him the fourth quarter.
Right, exactly. And, of course, he's not going to contribute anything to the offense. He doesn't have an offensive game except, you know, dunking the lob pass. So you're not going to see him hitting the foul line jumper. But at least have him in there giving Horford a break against Embiid, because it's amazing to me that Robert Williams, being what, he's probably 11 or 12 years younger than Al Horford, and he's not getting any playing time. So Mazzulla either doesn't trust him, or I don't think he's hurt him personally, although, you know, he banged his elbow diving for a loose ball in the previous game and all that. But I personally don't think he's hurt. He's not having trouble running and all that stuff, and he's very athletic. So is he going to contribute to this team or not? They have to decide. And Missoula right now is choosing not to play him. So it's baffling to me. And as far as Marcus Smart is concerned, people are criticizing Marcus Smart for being in there and taking those shots. Well, if Tatum's not going to take the shot with 3 or 4 seconds left, and he's dumping it to Marcus Smart with 0.3 seconds left, who's going to take it? I mean, I saw the quote. Obviously, we saw the quote from Jaylen Brown. I have to demand the ball a little more. Well, why didn't you do that in the context of the game?
You know what? This is the Basketball Insider we did last week that we posted, and it wasn't part of this program. I put a headline up there after putting your name up there and so on, and it was, is Tatum a leader?
Right.
And the more I see, the more this team needs, it needs an on-court leader. And, I mean, you have that, I think, in Marcus Smart. But just, and like what Brown is saying, what you just said, okay, I should demand the ball more, then do it.
Right. Right. And only that, even statistically, Tim and Rick, I look at it, and Jaylen Brown is shooting like 52-53% in this series and like 40% on three-pointers. And Jason Tatum is shooting like 32% on threes and like 43-44% overall. So, I mean, statistically, he's got a better shot. He's got a better chance of making the key shot than Jason Tatum in this series. Because Jason Tatum is playing 47, 48, 49 minutes in a game like this yesterday. And he's a little, let's face it, he's gassed at times, you know. I noticed that Embiid's been sort of running out of gas late in the games because he was coming back from the injury and he's still not up to par physically. But James Harden, he looks like he's 104 years old, but he was able to play 47
yeah,
yesterday.
I know.
And he's hit 16 of 22 shots, which is phenomenal for a guy his age who has been asked to play that many minutes. So, you know, Missoula has to decide who is going to be his go-to players are and stick with the plan, because another guy, Rick, that's been forgotten, who's been a heck of a player, Malcolm Brogdon is shooting 53% on threes in this series. 53%. By far the best percentage on the team. So why is he not in there at the end of the game? I don't get it.
Tim?
Yeah, you know, I agree with, you know, Brogdon. I mean, it's like, you know, he puts him in for short spurts, and this is a guy that you lived and died with throughout the regular season, and it's a strange path that the coaching staff has taken regarding players and minutes. It's almost counterintuitive to what got them there and gave them the number of wins that they did. It's kind of like watching the Bruins in the series against Florida. And Florida has just been so impressive. In the NHL playoffs. You know, I was watching the other day, and they just appear bigger, faster, stronger than everybody they're playing, and that was the Bruins. What got the Bruins to where they were was not the Bruins who played against Florida. So it's like, are the Celtics playing out of character that's making this as difficult as it is?
I think that the whole thing with the Celtics right now is they've sort of, Rick, I think they've reverted, and Tim, to last season in the playoffs and relying so much on Tatum, not just to take the shots, but also to bring the ball up. And, I mean, if you're Doc Rivers, you've been around for many years, and you know how to coach that, because it's just like Jason Tatum is being, and he's taken it upon himself to bring the ball up and then also use 15 or 16, the Luka Doncic mode of basketball, which I hate. And he's left taking bad shots at the end of the 24-second shot clock, or he's left making bad passes to his teammates with just 2 or 3 seconds left on the 24-second clock. And if you're the head coach, then you have to push the pace. You have to make guys speed up. And Tatum has not been able to do that in the series. And is it because he's not being pushed by Mazzulla to do that? I don't know. But there's something dramatically wrong here in terms of surprise. They're not surprising the opposing team because everyone knows that Jason Tatum is going to own the basketball for 18 or 19 seconds. It's just not the way to play. And you see Jaylen Brown play, and he tends to speed the game up. He's taking it to the basket. He takes the foul line jump. He's a very good intermediate range player. He pushes the pace. Marcus Smart tends to push the pace. Malcolm Brogdon tends to push the pace. But when the game is close, then they revert to some bad habits, which means Jason Tatum dribbling and dribbling and dribbling, and then not being able to handle a double or triple team or making the pass too late.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it so aggravating, because the talent is there for them to wipe out this Philadelphia team in less than 7 games, and it's just not happening.
Well, I think
that's a frustrating thing to me, Mike and Rick, is you watch Tatum have to bring the ball up, and they throw a double team at him, and it's almost like he panics, and he gives the ball away, and I go, you know, how many times is he doing that during the course of a game that, you know, gets the other team going, gives them a belief in that, hey, all we got to do is pressure these guys, and they're going to give us the ball back for the quick, easy basket. And, you know, get rid of the ball. Larry seldom ever lost the ball on a double team because it was out of his hands. You run at him, he knew where the open man was, and the ball was going over there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And that's my argument when you say, oh, Tatum is one of the all-time great. He's not yet. He's got to prove it by winning a couple of championships. And, yeah, he can shoot the heck out of the ball, and sometimes he looks like the best player in the world when he's scoring 46 or 50 or whatever. But in terms of his basketball IQ in these tight playoff games, he has not shown it like Larry Bird, for sure, or even Kevin McHale or guys like that, because he's just, like you said, Tim, he doesn't get rid of the ball quickly enough, and, you know, you got to be decisive, especially in a close playoff game. And Tatum has not been doing that. And, you know, you can understand him wanting to take the big shot, but if you're going to take it, well, take it when there's still time on the clock instead of, like, running the clock out. You know, it's just basic basketball 101. Beverly High gets rid of the ball before the 30-second clock. Why can't the Celtics? You know what I'm saying? It's unfathomable to me.
You know, it could be, and Tim brought up a super great point about the, you know, the double team.
Yes.
Because in all sports, and in football, for example, when the quarterback sees a double team, Brady in particular, knows where the open guy is. And, you know, Larry Bird used to, as you mentioned, Larry Bird could see everything. Bill Russell could see everything. He knew where the guy was, the defense was going before it did.
Right.
And it just might be that Tatum is a spectacular player in so many ways, but he doesn't have that vision that some people do. For some people, the game slows down as it gets quicker.
Right, exactly. That's a great point, Rick. With Tatum, you know, he's won some games for them because of his sheer skill, but I just think over the course of time here in 6 years, he has not shown that winning ability at the end of games, especially in the playoffs, because that was a problem against Golden State in the playoffs last year in the NBA Finals, and it's been the same kind of problem, especially in this Philadelphia series. So we don't know how this is going to end. Even though the Celtics are more talented, can they win a Game 5 at home tomorrow? Because if Embiid and Harden are as hot as they were yesterday, the Celtics are going to have a struggle to win that game, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. You know, you just don't know. The thing is, Mike, you just don't know who's going to show up on a game-to-game basis. Are we going to get the 40-point blowout? Are we going to sit here and on the edge of our seats watching overtime, and it's like, okay, what's going to happen in overtime now? Because you know what's happened in the past.
Right, right.
And it doesn't fill you with a whole lot of confidence that, you know, for a team that played as well as they did during the regular season, and we know that they have these mental lapses, and they play like they've never been on the court before at times in their decision making.
Right. Yes.
And the coach seems like he's never done it before, and to a staggering degree. And it's like, you know, God, it doesn't inspire you with a lot of confidence. Like, you know, we watched the past, yeah, they've struggled a bit, but, you know, during the Brady years, you had Brady, you had Belichick, and every game you knew they were going to win.
Yep.
And if they didn't win, it was, oh, you know, geez, oh, the other, well, you know, what can you do? But they didn't lose that often.
Right.
And they made right decisions, and they made tough decisions, and they made the big plays. They made the big stop, and you had everybody on the same page, you know, and that's why they were so good, because everybody subjugated their own talents for the good of the team. And the, like the Larry Bird era, everybody subjugated their game for the good of the team. You know, it's one of the things that Robert Parrish talked about all the time. Yeah, I could have scored more points, but you know, we had other guys who could do it. So I did what I did best.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And you know, even as recently, more recent, I mean, obviously the Celtics only won one title in 1986, and that was 2008. And when you have Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, who was playing out at that point in his career, Paul Pierce badly won the championship, and Ray Allen, and those guys were, I think, more situational, better players situationally than the current guys are. Garnett was, you know, Mr. Tenacity. He was the Dave Cowens of his era. And he played with ferocity that we haven't seen since then, okay, on the Celtics team. And Ray Allen, of course, was a great pure shooter. And Paul Pierce in 2008 was still a phenomenal scorer. Well, they combined their talents and their mental toughness to win that title. This current Celtics team may even be more talented in terms of depth than that 2008 team. However, they lack the mental toughness, in my opinion, at least so far. They could only take it so far last year against Golden State. They were within a couple of games of winning it all. But to me, they haven't shown the mental toughness of the 2008 championship team. What do you guys think?
The 2008 team also had a bench that was loaded with experience.
Correct.
That had played in tough situations. You know, P.J. Brown, Paul Pierce said, you know, what if I ask? Come on, please come back and play for it. And what did he do? He knew what his limitations were. He knew what he was going to give them. And he gave them some key rebounds, some blocked shots, and occasionally scored a basket point. But he knew what his job was. They
right.
all knew a defined role was theirs, and they went out there and they just did it game after game after game, and they played especially well in crunch time.
Right, and Leon Poe was another great component of that bench. Devin Rick,
yeah.
And of course, and who could forget Eddie House, whose specialty was coming off the bench and draining three-pointer after three-pointer. And of course, you had Doc Rivers as a coach. He was already an experienced coach at that point in his career, and he masterminded that whole effort. And you had Tom Thibodeau as the defensive genius, an assistant coach, masterminding the defense. So, you know, it was a different type of team, more experienced, like you said. But really, you can't make excuses right now and say the Celtics are too young because, you know, Marcus has been around for 9 years, Jason Tatum's been around for six, and Jaylen Brown's been around for seven. So, no excuses. They have the talent. They have a great bench. Mazzulla, well, who knows? He does some inexplicable things, but they have enough talent to overcome this.
Well, they haven't won a close game yet.
That's correct.
So, what do you see around the... we got a few minutes left, Mike. What about the rest of the playoffs?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Jimmy Butler, of course, is having a phenomenal playoffs against the Knicks here, and they lead 2-1. They're playing right now in Miami. But, Tim, if I had to throw out this question, who has been the best player in the playoffs so far? Off the top of your head, maybe you might... Just throw a name out to me here.
Oh, the best player. Well, let's see. Embiid's been hurt, so he hasn't, you know, can't really put him out there. You haven't heard a lot about Curry's game.
Well, yeah, but he's been a little bit up and down. But I don't want to make it too tough here, Tim. But I will tell you this: Devin Booker, for my money, has been the best player in the playoffs. We don't hear too much about him. I mean, he's a great player. He's an NBA All-Star and all that. But because they play in Phoenix, here on the East Coast, we don't hear. He scored, you know, he scored 47 when they were down 2-0 to win, and he shot 15 for 20. And last night he was like 14 for 18, and they scored 36. He's got 145 points in 4 games. He's averaging 36.5 points per game for Phoenix, which has now tied their series against Denver, which had got 53 points from Jokic last night. He's been phenomenal, but yet Kevin Durant and Devin Booker were able to overcome that because both of them had 36 points last night. But Devin Booker has been just on fire. And, Rick, when I see the difference between him and Tatum, for example, and they're basically the same age, Devin Booker's only 26 years old, been around a few years, and he's very decisive when he brings the ball up over half court. Now, he's a guard, but he kind of knows matchups, and he knows where he can take advantage of matchups, and he gets into his offense early, and you don't see him dribbling the ball for 18, 20 seconds. He fires away.
That's one of the problems with not calling a timeout, because you call a set play, and I know that way back when there were what you call pure guards, they knew the offense, they'd call the play. And if, you know, or Arbach would holler out a number to them and they'd do a play. But this thing is just, it's barnyard basketball, which I didn't work last night.
Exactly. And look at, even in 1981, the championship, Tiny Archibald. How good was he at orchestrating the offense when Larry Bird was in his second year at the time and McHale had just come aboard and all that stuff? How good was he for that championship team? Because he exhibited all the qualities of a true point guard. He could score, but boy, did he get rid of the ball and get him to the scores. He's another perfect example. Someone pointed out tonight that you acquired Malcolm Brogdon to bring the ball up in situations like last night.
Yep.
That way you have Tatum running off picks and maybe getting the ball on a late action, on a pass from Malcolm Brogdon or even Marcus Smart. But that's why you acquired Brogdon, because he's a quality guard who can think the game. And we've seen that time and again this year, that he can think the game. So why put the onus on Jason Tatum to bring the ball up, to use 19 seconds practically at the end of a game, and end up losing the game because he gets rid of the ball too late? It's like I said, that goes right into the coaching aspect. Joe Mazzulla has to insist on that. Okay, we want Jason Tatum to take the shot. That's fine. I'm fine with that. Or Jaylen Brown, for that matter. Or Horford, for that matter. But let's have Malcolm Brogdon make the play.
Mm-hmm.
Let him orchestrate that final play.
All right, well, listen. The Celtics...
What it's down to is Jaylen simply doesn't get the ball up when he brings it up. You know,
right.
I'm going to keep it, and he either gets trapped, he turns it over, and he gets rushed into a shot. Even if Larry brought the ball up, the first thing Larry did when he got across half court was he gave the ball up.
Right.
And then he ran to a spot looking to get the ball back. But
correct.
He gave the ball up so that the defense would have to turn around and look at the ball, but not at him.
Perfect point, Tim. I agree with you 100%.
All right, listen. The Celtics management listened to you guys last year, and they made the improvements. So I'm suggesting, my wife always tells me when I start complaining about something, well, why don't you write a letter? So maybe we should do that. Great points, one and all, and we'll see what happens tomorrow night. That's the beauty of the playoffs.
It's just a tough situation where you know the Celtics should be at least ahead 3-1, and you know, with a little bit of smarter playing, they could be 4-0, and they could be waiting for the Miami Heat or the Knicks here, you know?
All right. Mike, always fun, and I believe we will be doing a program next Monday because it is not a holiday yet, and so I look forward to it, and a lot can happen between now and then.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
Well, thanks, guys.
Next Monday, but the following Monday, I will be in France.
Oh.
Very nice.
Wow.
Very nice.
The Tour de France?
We're doing a Viking River cruise. We're going from Paris to the Normandy coast, Mike.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. I've been to France, Tim and Rick, and to me, the best food in the world was when we went to Paris. You couldn't get a bad meal there.
I've heard that. All right, Mike.
It's true.
Okay, we'll talk again next week, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
All right,
that's Mike Grenier, who is our sports journalist and our basketball insider. And Tim, any final thoughts? We covered a lot of territory here tonight.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. All right. Have a good evening, brother, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. You also.
Thank you, Coach Kearns. Appreciate it. Take care. All right, that is Tim Kearns, our ambassador of goodwill and our sports analyst extraordinaire. For Bill Newell, Bill Proposky, and Tim, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good evening.